Coming up on Golf Today, the X-Man and the Iceman get a team win in NOLA, carrying their Ryder Cup mojo to the Zurich Classic. Will either or both take some momentum forward? And NASA takes off in Los Angeles, winning the Dio Implant LA Open by 5. Wait till you hear what inspired her to such a big-time win in the City of Angels. And stories to feel good about, a father and son making the cut on the PGA Tour, and a birdie barrage leads to an emotional hometown win. Settle in. It's a happy Monday on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Monday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. I have missed this desk. I was in South Florida last week, pal. My boys were playing tennis. I played some golf, my second round of the year. I typically text my wife when I make a birdie. No text messages. Went to the wife. No birdies. I was shut out. Surprised?
I'm not particularly surprised. I would argue you're only on that golf course because you can no longer actually beat your kids in tennis, because they would whoop you on the tennis court as well.
This is all true. Let's talk about some guys who made a lot of birdies in Eagles' final round of the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. Did you get to watch it? Some fantastic action down in Louisiana. These two studs, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. This is the seventh hole, the par 5, 7 wood for the UCLA Bruin.
254 yards. Watching this closely, and it ends up close. 7 feet, 8 inches.
Fantastic shot. They've kind of been running in place the first 6 holes. This was kind of the shot to get things going. Xander now trying to cash it in for eagle.
This is called hamming and egging. That got them to 31 under par.
Absolutely. At this point, cruising. Saw them pair together so nicely at the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. It's something to hold off Billy Horschel, who won as a soloist in 2013, won with Scott Piercy in 2018. His second from 104 yards at 10.
This is the fiery Floridian, 3 feet, 5 inches. That made them get to 27 under par, 4 back at the time.
Yeah, closing fast. Now Xander, the par putt from 8 feet. Gonna touch that left edge. Not happy, drops to 30 under, only 3 shots ahead of Horschel and Burns.
And here he is on the 10th. From 126 yards, second shot for the par 4.
Just not what you want. You're feeling maybe a little bit of pressure. He short sides himself right. Not the place to miss it. So, yeah, deep breath, exhale. 11th hole, Billy Hole. He's trying to capitalize here on the par 5.
He smells blood in the water as the leaders are stumbling. Third shot from the front greenside bunker. They'd make birdie. Get to 29 under par.
I loved seeing it. I wanted to see a little bit of action. And who smiles more in New Orleans than Billy Horschel, where he got his first PGA Tour. Now back to Xander on the 10th. That's a par putt from 6 feet. So now the lead is down to 1. It's a little bit nervous time, Eamon.
Here we are in the very next hole. Xander, a long putt from eagle, just short of the green.
Yeah, they were taking on water at this point. This was a beautiful lag putt. Gets it close. They'd make birdie, get back to 31 under, just 2 ahead. Now, this key moment, Sam Burns, 16th hole, par 4. This is water left. They call it a penalty area these days.
That green is reachable, but it's not reachable from there.
Long conversation ensued with the officials there. They took the drop, trying to save par. Beautiful pitch shot. They'd save par, remain 2 back, but that was a crucial, crucial moment there. Now the 17th hole, this is Sam Burns after Billy missed the green.
Is that one well short? They'd make bogey, drop the 3 back.
Yeah, and then you have Patrick Cantlay after Xander missed the green. Well, short game, but just won't quit.
That's why he's number 5 in the world.
Yeah, hits that to a foot. They would save par. A pretty comfortable walk up the 18th. This is a short putt for bogey. Xander Schauffele, he's got a big smile. These kids have known each other for quite a long time, growing up in Southern California. 29 under is the winning score. 2-shot win over the law firm of Horschel and Burns. Terrific week for Doc Redman and Sam Ryder as well. Let's hear from the champs.
Can you put into words, I guess, how this is different winning this together as opposed to your individual wins?
Well, I felt like I did half as much work as a usual win, so I probably won't be as tired tomorrow. I mean, Xander played great all week. I think anytime you can share, you know, success, I think that makes it just a little sweeter. And so similar to a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup, winning a match and then winning both the cups that we've played in together, it just adds to it. It makes it a little more, like I said, a little sweeter because, you know, shared enjoyment and shared successes is just that much better.
Is it an assumption we should make that you'll be playing those team events together pretty much every time and not splitting the duo up ever again?
I mean,
that's up to the captains.
Yeah.
So we'll take it one at a time. If you can get DL3 on the horn, he'll let you know.
Let them play. Don't mess with this partnership. You look at the career comparison, a lot of similarities between the 30-year-old Cantlay and 28-year-old Xander Schauffele, two sons of Southern California, 12 tour wins between them, 17 runner-up finishes, similar in top 10s, cuts made, a tour championship apiece, each on the list, I think, of best players without a major championship. So 29 under, able to get it done, Eamon Lynch. What was your biggest takeaway from this win by these two esteemed players?
To me, it was striking that just how in sync these guys actually are with each other. And it's not just the career resume that we're looking at there. Even if you break down their game statistically, they kind of hit the ball the same distance. They hit about as many greens and as many fairways as each other during the course of a round. And they were one of the few teams in the field who had a really good combined rank in birdie average on the PGA Tour, because a lot of statistics don't necessarily translate very well into team play.
Yeah.
But the frequency with which a guy makes birdies does translate, particularly when we're talking about the four-ball rounds. And, you know, Xander Schauffele is 13th on tour in birdie average. Patrick Cantlay is 5th. That's a pretty big combination in a format like this, and it proved to be so.
It's been fun to watch this partnership blossom from their amateur days to the President's Cup, to the Ryder Cup. We're going to bring in Paige McKenzie, who joins us on this Monday. I know you watch very closely. You watch their body language. You watch their club choice, how simpatico they were. What was your chief takeaway, though, from the win?
Yeah, I agree with Eamon, and they just seemed to fit together really nicely. I mean, it was down to the body language. There were a couple moments yesterday and through the weekend that you saw them, and they just seemed to be literally in sync as they were walking. But I think it does go back to the reason that they became friends that they point to was the fact that they were partnered together because of all the similarities with their golf game. And that's not always the case with players. You don't have to have similar games to be great partners, but in this case, it's worked out very well.
Who needed this win more?
Oh, I think it was Xander needed the win more. I mean, Patrick Cantlay is just coming off a playoff loss last week to Jordan Spieth at the RBC Heritage. Xander had been 3 years removed from his last win at the Century. And I think, to Paige's point, what's really worth pointing out here is in team format in four balls, anybody can get hot. I think when you're playing alternate shot, that's a real test of how well two guys meld with each other in terms of disposition, in terms of games, in terms of attitude. They are now undefeated in foursome play, in alternate shot between a Ryder Cup and a President's Cup. And now they've obviously played pretty well here in two alternate shot rounds at the Zurich Classic. So if you're Davis Love at the President's Cup, or Zach Johnson at next year's Ryder Cup, you're already penciling in these guys as your anchor match.
Do you agree with Eamon, Paige, that Xander needed this win even more than Patrick Cantlay?
Without question. Yeah, and I think he even acknowledged after the round in his post-round interview, he said, you know, I haven't been in this position for a while, and Patrick helped keep me calm because he is such a calming presence. I think, you know, when you look back at Xander Schauffele and some of the Sundays that he's had, I think you can look, and he would say he's left strokes on the table. He hasn't finished off golf tournaments the way that he's wanted to. So the fact that he was able to do that yesterday, was able to hit the shots that he wanted to when he needed to, and then get over that hump. You have to deal with the emotions and the nerves at the time, and to have somebody by your side that believes in you and what you're doing certainly, I think, obviously helped Xander, but I think he's going to take away the most from this event of the two of them.
You could just see how comfortable they were. You know, they say a good team, you know, you never have to say you're sorry to your teammate. And this duo first teamed up in 2019. We talked about it at the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne. They played very well for the captain. You recall who that was, folks? Tiger Woods. They went 2-2-0 in their rookie appearance, the tight 16-14 victory for the U.S. over the internationals. And of course, you know, why even mess with the duo? September Whistling Straits, U.S. Ryder Cup captain Steve Stricker put the two friends together, and they went even better, 2-0-0 in defeating Rory McIlroy, Ian Poulter, 5-3 in foursomes, and then took down Lee Westwood and Matt Fitzpatrick, 2-1 in foursomes, part of a 19-9 blowout win over Europe. And then, Paige, you talked about their body language seeming to mimic one another, how they walk, the pace of their walk, the way they carry their clubs, and you noticed that as well.
It's amazing. I mean, this is like, you couldn't ask for a better tempo walk, think, play golf the same way. I got a kick out of watching the two of them in those moments where it just seemed like they were clicking together so well.
That's, you know, strike you as well. I hadn't really noticed it during the broadcast, but when Paige brought it up, I was like, yeah, that's a great point to hear. Even their cadence seems the same. Even in the press conference that we played just a little bit ago, the timbre of their voice seems similar, the pace of their walk, and clearly the way they think about this game.
Yeah, and these are two guys who went on holiday together in Napa on a wine-tasting tour last year as well. They're clearly very comfortable in each other's presence. And to me, that is your baseline for a team that's going to work. If they're uncomfortable in each other's presence, which we tend to see more in a Ryder Cup than here, guys can choose their own partner here. And I would actually like to see more guys choose partners here that maybe are out of the comfort zone a little bit, just to see how it might work in future international team competitions. A little more experimentation, a little less familiarity, but certainly these guys work on both of the ends of that spectrum.
They sure did. Two-shot victory, Paige. You've played in team competitions. What makes a good team or good duo?
Well, what's interesting is, like, it's very easy to see two players that are similar and that would work. But that's not always the case. And I think back to one of the most successful teams that I've witnessed, and that's Lexi Thompson and Christy Kerr, and they're not alike. Their games are quite different, in fact. But they are one of the most successful women's teams that we've ever seen. They're 9-1-2 in Solheim Cup and International Crown. They've lost one match in 12, which is pretty extraordinary. But I think they draft differently. I think Christy Kerr is such an alpha personality and leader that it helps give Lexi confidence to play the game that she is capable of playing. So it's interesting because you do see different dynamics in team structures. One of the other teams that stood out to me this weekend was that Billy Horschel and Sam Burns partnership that we've seen. It's now the second time that they've partnered together. And I got a kick out of this. Billy Horschel kind of taunting his teammates, saying, I've got 4 birdies, you've got 3, and there's an internal competition. And we've seen that with Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed, where they joked about, or Patrick Reed joked about the fact that they were a little bit competitive in their duo as well. So I think there's different dynamics in play that make good partnerships, and you really don't know until you match them up how they could mesh.
I think Paige is right here, Damon. There are several criteria, I think, that go into making a great team. And sometimes they don't always apply to every team. You could take the intimidation value. I mean, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer won 4 World Cups together back in the 1960s. They were also unbeaten in Ryder Cup play. And they won a PGA Championship team event 3 times as well. But, you know, there was no one alpha in that group. Mm. But if you look at perhaps one of the most successful, if not the most successful, Ryder Cup partnership of all time, Seve Ballesteros and Jose Maria Olazabal, that was an alpha partnership there. Seve was the guy who was just venomously competitive with a chip on his shoulder. Those guys played 15 Ryder Cup matches. They only ever lost 2 of them. And again, they were undefeated in alternate shot play. And Seve's not exactly the easiest guy to partner with. So it's, to me, that's a different dynamic. It's very similar, I suppose, to the dynamic that Paige just described between Christy Kerr and Lexi Thompson. And then sometimes it is a personality one. I would liken the Cantlay-Shoffley partnership to Davis Love and Freddie Couples, who won the World Cup 4 straight years in a row and went, I think, 5-2-1 in the President's Cup as well. So much goes into it, and it doesn't necessarily apply equally to every partnership.
I'm glad you brought up Jack and Arnie, 2 alpha males who paired so wonderfully together. 2004, you had the exact opposite situation, the modern-day Jack and Arnie, if you will, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, who paired horribly at the Ryder Cup at Oakland Hills for Hal Sutton, who wanted to put these two Brahma Bulls together and see what happens. He said, I'm a sportsman just like y'all. I want to see this. And what we saw was icy body language between Tiger and Phil, specifically on 18 when Phil drove it toward the fence. And Tiger gave him nothing, not a pat on the back, not a, it's okay, bro, we're going to find a way out of this. Then they went back out in the afternoon and lost again. So that was an experiment where the pairing of two alpha males did not work.
Well, it really didn't work, and I think it's intimidated every Ryder Cup captain since then, because, you know, we could have put a Bryson Brooks pairing together last year, but Steve Stricker stayed well away from that one.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, Paige? Things that haven't worked. You mentioned the great partnership between Lexi and Christy Kerr. You know, what are the personality traits that maybe don't go so well together?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the word personality because it has a lot to do with it. In fact, Julie Inkster implemented personality tests, and I know it's been common amongst both sides on the United States, for sure, on both the men's and the women's, to do personality tests to figure out what fits together. When it comes to decision-making, when it comes to playing which ball, when it comes to certain things as it relates to strategy on a golf course, you do need personalities to mesh. You do need someone to acquiesce and someone to maybe take the role. Or if you have two personalities that are more into compromise, then maybe that will work well. So it is interesting that that becomes such an ingredient more than just statistics. It does come down to sometimes who the personalities are.
It's a great point, Paul Azinger, 2008 Ryder Cup, finding those green light personalities, yellow light and red light, and of course beating Europe back in 2008.
And the pod system sometimes works, doesn't it?
Yeah, sometimes it does.
Well, on Sunday, NASA did what NASA is supposed to do, deliver a rocket-fueled performance. NASA Hataoka entered the final round at Wiltshire Country Club, leading by 4, stepped on the gas. Bethan Nichols joins us next to talk about that, and also a shockingly rare misstep by Jin Young Ko.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the new Wingman, crank up your game. And by introducing the Cobra King Forge Tech Irons, a better player's iron.
Final round highlights, LPGA out in Los Angeles, NASA Hataoka, par 4 first birdie putt from distance, Eamon.
And this is how you want to start when you already have a 4-stroke cushion.
Yes, build it. Gets to 12 under at that point. She was not done. Par 3, 4th. Her tee shot, just everything just seemed to be in perfect form.
She hits this one to 5 feet. Makes another birdie.
Difficult golf course, Eamon.
13 under.
I mean, this is not easy what we're seeing. So she birdies 1, she birdies 4. Now this is another long birdie putt at 5.
She's playing a golf course different from everyone else, Damon. Makes this one, too. Gets to 14 under.
So she birdies 3 of her first 5 holes. She did drop a shot at the 6th, but now she's back in business at the par 3 7th.
You want to know how to make a recovery? A bounce back, Damon? This is how you do it.
Just a gorgeous tee shot. She would go on to make that putt. Got to 14 under. And not done yet. You know, you're thinking maybe I'll try to 2-putt for birdie here at the par 5, 15th. She had other ideas.
This effectively ended the tournament. Eagle to get to 16 under and a 6-stroke lead.
Yeah, you saw Hannah Green from Australia in the foreground. Not much she could do. NASA gets to 16 under, 6-shot cushion. Going into the final hole, she would tap in for bogey. 4 under 67 on the day. The dousing from the water bottles, her 6th LPGA Tour victory. LPGA, of course, stays in Los Angeles this week down in Palos Verdes. Final round, 67, good for a 5-shot victory. It's interesting, guys. After her win, she met with the media. She was asked about how'd she bounce back from the miscut at the Lotte Championship. And she said she drew inspiration from Jordan Spieth, who missed the cut at the Masters, and said, hey, listen, so Jordan misses the cut, then he won the Heritage, so you never know what's going to happen in golf. So I think that was something that boosted my confidence. So she missed the cut, the Lotte, and goes on and wins in Los Angeles. So for more, we're joined by our friend Golf Week senior writer Bethan Nichols. Always great to see you. So she said something clicked for her on Friday, Beth Ann. What do you think it was?
Well, I asked her specifically. She said that, you know, she actually spent about an hour and a half on a video chat with a coach in Japan earlier in the week before the tournament started, and they worked on ball position. And on the seventh hole on Friday, she got a little bit closer to the ball. So she had been working on moving the ball position more toward her left foot, and then she just got a little bit closer and rattled off three straight birdies starting on the seventh hole on Friday and made 15 birdies total and an eagle after that. So, you know, she didn't see this coming, I don't think. Obviously she got a lot of confidence in her ball striking from that small move. And then her putting was just phenomenal.
Beth Ann, we love to have this debate in golf about the best players never to win a major. And I know NASA has won a tournament on the Japan LPGA Tour twice that is considered a major, the first time when she was 17 years old. Are we ready to hang that burden on her right now and say that she's the best player in the women's game without a major?
I know. It's kind of like a compliment, but not really, right? Yes, I definitely think she owns that title, even though Jessica Korda has the same number of victories, and that's six without a major. The two of them share that distinction of the most titles without a major victory on the LPGA. And you know, the thing about NASA is she's lost twice in a playoff at a major championship, of course, most recently last year at the US Women's Open at Olympic Club. So she's been so close, and she was asked about that as well yesterday, and she says, you know, she thinks it really comes down to her short game. Her short game was just a little bit better. She'd already have one. So, you know, even though Jessica Korda has six titles, she's 29, And NASA's only 23, so that six-year gap in LPGA years is like a dozen in terms of the lifespan of a player. So I definitely think that NASA has that title at the minute.
All right, NASA, one of the best players in the game. Jin Young Ko is the best player in the game. How do you think she'll respond to what happened to her over the weekend, her first quad ever at an LPGA event?
Shocking meltdown it was in that Barranca. I mean, you know, I think for Jin Young, look, I'm going to give her a lot of credit mentally because she's one of the toughest mentally on tour without question. And she bounced back and birdied the 18th hole after she made this terrible eight. But this all came down to just poor decision making. And so I think she definitely is going to, she's already, I'm sure, had powwows with her team, but she can't overanalyze this. This was just one hole. She has a tremendous caddy in Dave Brooker. I'm sure he's given her a lot of perspective on this. And she's, I think this works to her advantage going into a new golf course this week in Palos Verdes. She's never played in an LPGA event there before. And I think that'll actually do her some good because there's a lot of new stuff to learn and focus on and to kind of put this in the rearview mirror. So I don't think Jin Young will spend too much time thinking about this. And I wasn't at all surprised that she was deflated on Sunday. You know, who wouldn't be?
Beth Ann, you mentioned this week's stop on the LPGA Tour. The players don't have to travel very far, though it could still take a while to get there in LA traffic. So down in Palos Verdes, new golf course, new tournament, what do we need to know about it?
Well, the beauty of this event is that there's so much history, 25 years of history, in fact, of one of the best collegiate events in the United States. So Ohio State has hosted the Northrop Grumman Regional Challenge for years. And there are a lot of players in the field who have hoisted a trophy here before. You know, you look at Bronte Law, Leona McGuire, Annie Park, Carlotta Segonda have all won. And Lilia Vu, who just finished in the top 10 this past week at Wilshire for her second top 10 of the season. So I think a lot of players will be feeling really, really good coming in. And normally they play that event in February and the weather can be brutal. So I'm sure they're all excited to be here in May where it should be a lot nicer this time around. And it's a special week for Lizette Salas. Her longtime instructor, Jim Gormley, is the director of golf at Palos Verdes. So a huge connection there for her. And then from the things you'd like to forget file, Jennifer Kupcho actually suffered a concussion at this event 5 years ago. She fell off a golf cart and it really, you know, was a traumatic thing. And so she was on a shuttle ride and got tangled up with her pull cart with a spectator and hit her head on the sidewalk. So I do think, though, that winning a major very recently will help erase any bad vibe she might have coming back.
Beth Ann Nichols with all the storylines from the Palos Verdes Championship. Great to spend some time with you. Enjoy your Monday. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
All right, Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week Magazine. A closer look at the career bio of Nasa Hatoka, latest winner on the LPGA, her sixth career win. By the way, she's got like two wins by six and now a win by five. So when she's playing well, she absolutely runs away from the field. Twice major championship runner-up, six-time winner on the Japanese LPGA Tour, four Japanese majors, and named after the American Space Program. We welcome back our own Paige McKenzie. Lots to unpack here. I mean, this was an absolute drubbing by Nasa Hatoka. What stood out to you?
She stood out to me. I've followed her for a long time on the LPGA Tour, and I remember actually the first major championship playoff loss at KPMG, and I remember talking to her caddy at the time, Dana DeRue, and she was only 19 years old, and he was just glowing about who she was as a player. He said she's got guts, she's got determination, she's got the mental side. He's like, I've been out here a long time, I've seen a lot of great champions, but there's something about not only the physical gifts that she's got, but the mental side. And the same is true of Greg Johnston. I talked to him last year, her current caddy, and he said the same thing. She's focused in anything she does, and he can't believe it based on her young age. So it's one of those where you've got an incredible talent, and you've got the mental side to go with it. And she's had that for a very long time on the LPGA Tour. I'm just excited to see how good she can get. When she was playing that back nine and the way that she was swinging the golf club, you're wondering, how can she ever hit it offline? There's just an efficiency about how she plays, and it really showed this week.
Well, Paige, someone who's shown a lot of ruthless efficiency on the LPGA Tour over the last couple of years, Jin Young Ko, this is the first time since last June she's had consecutive finishes outside the top 10 on the LPGA Tour. You have to go back 14 events before that's happened. And her 75 was the worst round she played since the Evian last July. Is it just rust? Is it an anomaly? Is there anything to worry about here?
I mean, I'll go back to that the final hole on Saturday, and you just have to think, what happened? Jin Young Ko is one of the best that we've ever seen at bogey avoidance. She's one of the best at making smart decisions. She hits so many greens in regulation. And when you think about this, yes, it means you're a good ball striker, but it also means you know where to hit it, that you're not short-sighting yourself, you're not getting too aggressive, even though you are one of the best. This was such a bizarre sequence of events, because she is such a smart and high IQ golfer. So I'm gonna write this off, and I'll let Beth Ann, I'll use her terminology and say she was a little bit deflated on Sunday considering what happened, how she ended her round on Saturday. But that was such an anomaly. I think Jin Young Ko is not going anywhere because of the stability of which she typically plays. It was just a very odd weekend in LA.
Great point, Paige. I love what Morgan Pressel said on the broadcast, that she talked to the caddy, Dave Brooker, who said she doesn't hit it poorly. Like, we've never been in that kind of spot before, so she's maybe a little bit surprised in terms of how to play out of the Barranca. I can tell you, as an LA native, not a place to be.
Yeah, Dave Brooker needs to caddy for you and I, Dave. He's going to be a lot more familiar with that kind of scenario.
Absolutely. Much more from Paige in just a little bit, folks. Let's see who's in the race to the CME Globe. It's early at this point, but still, you want to put yourself in position to be in Naples come end of the year. Danielle Kang, hot start to her 2022. Celine Boutier, fantastic week in Los Angeles. See Taya Titikun, Jennifer Kupcho, winners already this season. All right, folks, great story this week from the Zurich as father-son duo Jay and Bill Haas played into the weekend down in NOLA. More on their historic made cut when Golf Today returns. About stories to feel good about on this Golf Today Monday. One of the best father and son duo. I think we'll call them golf royalty. Eamon, talking about Jay Haas and son Bill. They made the cut at the Zurich Classic. Jay Haas is 68 years young.
This was Bill on Saturday from the straw on the fifth hole. This was best ball, so it wasn't as though Pops put him in there to begin with.
It's a great point. So fun to see Jay Haas with his son, the moments they've had throughout each of their careers, including the President's Cup back in 2015. But this was just neat to see the smiles. And, you know, we always say the golf ball doesn't know how old you are.
No, it doesn't. Jay Haas at 68 he made his first cut on the PGA Tour in 1973. One man in the field was alive when Jay Haas made his first cut on tour.
Absolutely. And this has been a family affair, really. Think about Jay's brother, or I should say Bill's brother, Jay Jr., who plays golf and has caddied at times for both his father and his brother. And what a neat moment for them to share. In fact, when Jay made that 5-foot putt on 18 to get into the weekend on Friday, he said it was the most nervous he had ever been standing over a putt. And you think about the bio, 799 career PGA Tour starts, the 9 wins. We mentioned it, the oldest player to make a cut in PGA Tour history. It was Sam Snead at 67 years old, 2 months and 23 days back in 1979. Only one player, as you mentioned, was born when Jay made his first PGA Tour cut. Afterwards, father and son spoke to Amanda Renner.
It's been a fantastic week. Exceeded expectations. We just had a lot of fun. We also grinded. It was certainly not comfortable at times because we're just want to do well. You know, you're not just coming out here just for the show of it. So to have some success and make the cut, play the weekend, an alternate shot like today, even though we're by ourselves first out, you still get those feelings of not wanting to hit a poor shot for your partner or for your dad. And so it was a mix of emotions, but just, you know, to be able to do what we're doing and see how good he still is, and I know that, but just under the gun and watch it, it's motivation. You know, when I struggle, I can be like, well, I got 30 more years if I want to, you know, hang and be like him. So.
799th start. You made some crazy headlines this week. What is the most memorable part of this week? And are you shocked by the amount of support I'm sure you've received?
A little surprised, yes. Yeah. But I think I can't say one specific thing was better than anything else. The entire week was great. All the other players giving me attaboys and pops and all this stuff. It was fun to be on the range with the best players in the world, watching them, learning from them as well. I feel like I can still learn. I might not could put it to use, but I can still try to learn. And just being with Bill, it just nothing like it. As any parent can attest to, watching your kids do something they love to do and do it well, it just doesn't get much better.
Man, Jay Haas, last one on the PGA Tour in 1993, last one on the PGA Tour champions in 2016. How cool is this story?
It really is good. I mean, it's 17 years since he first won on the PGA Tour Champions as well. It was a really interesting line he had in there where he said he can still learn at 68. And I saw a great social media post the other day from Bill Harmon, brother of Butch, who's a great teacher in his own right in California. He caddied for Jay Haas for 10 years on the PGA Tour. And he said Jay Haas was always looking for something to improve on the next day. He said even if they were going to miss the cut, and they were clearly missing the cut on Friday, Jay would turn to him and said, I got something. I got a feel from that last wedge shot I just hit. And it's that kind of diligence and application and just simply enjoying the game as much as he does that has Jay Haas here at 68. I wouldn't necessarily agree with giving him the all-time cut record
over
that Sam Snead has.
I mean,
and Jay himself said last week that he wouldn't claim that record. Sam's was in individual competition rather than team competition. But it's not as though the kid carried the old man here this week. Jay Haas held his own.
And it's been a struggle the last few years for Bill Haas. So what a neat moment that he could share with his dad. And I can't help but think about 2015 in the President's Cup in South Korea, where Jay Haas was the captain and Bill got the decisive point in a one-up victory over South Korea's Sangmoon Bae, and father and son sharing that moment and hugging. And I remember just being nervous. I was nervous for Jay, and I was nervous for Bill trying to bring that win home, and that's exactly what he was able to do.
It really was a great moment then and a great moment this week. You know, there aren't many kind of dynasties in golf, and particularly in American golf, but this is one of them. You know, it stretches back generations here and probably generations to go in the future as well, but to me, he is called the pro's pro for a reason.
Yeah.
You don't find anyone in this game who's got something negative to say about Jay Haas. And the fact that he was getting all of the high fives and pops, as he said, in the locker room there from the players, shows the amount of respect that exists for him and his willingness to go out there, even in a team event, and not with the fear. As he admitted earlier in the week, he had a fear that the course was too long for him.
Right.
He didn't have it. He was going to embarrass himself. He did nothing of the kind.
And hopefully a bounce for Bill as he goes forward in his PGA Tour career as well. How about some highlights from the DP World Tour? In case you missed it,
Over the weekend, the ISPS had a championship in Spain. Adrian Ortega, leader, heading into the final round, par for third, his second.
He hits this close for birdie, gets to 12 under par. But here comes a challenger.
Yeah, Pablo Larrazábal, par three, seventh hole. Tee shot from 159 yards.
And this is pretty much a kick-in. Gets him to 9 under, still 3 back.
Yeah, he still has a lot of work to do. Love seeing those blue skies over in Spain. So this is now the birdie putt, right to lefter.
Drains it, 10 under par, but still, Damon, 3
yeah,
back.
Still with work to do, but he birdied 10, 11, and 12. And now the par 4, 13th, second from middle of the fairway.
Well, when you birdie 10, 11, 12, 13, knock it close. 14 under par, yeah. Solo lead.
On a heater now. He bogeyed 15, so he cooled off at the par 5, 16th from distance birdie putt.
This gets him back to 14 under par.
Birdie 18 to finish at 15 under for the tournament, but Ortega still has a chance. His second from the fairway. He needs an eagle to force a playoff.
First part of that is hitting the green, and he does that.
Okay, step one. Check. Now step two, or maybe we'll call it step three, to force the playoff. Don't leave it short, kid. Just kind of wiggles, yeah, a little to the right side. What a couple of months it's been for Pablo Larrazábal. He is your winner. Hugs all around, big time smiles, always special to win on home soil. And what a back nine he had, a final round 62, as we hear from the champ.
Tell you what, yeah, it's been a long time, man. You know, it's been tough. The last 3 years, the last maybe 5 years, 6 years. I know I had a win 3 years ago, but you know when. When your golf is not there, and then injuries, and then you know that these 20-year-old kids are coming in and they flying the ball 50, 60 yards over you, over yours, and you're not putting well, you're not chipping well. You think you know there are a lot of things coming into my mind. I thought about not playing anymore a lot, and. And you know, sometimes if you believe and you keep working hard, you know, life gives you back. And yeah, it's been a long road, and I'm not gonna say anything, you know, to me. But I think, you know, for the trust and for the work I did, and for the patience, I think I really deserve it.
Indeed, 5 years of tough times. He says lots of reflection, wondering where he stood in the game compared to the 20-somethings. You see now a 7-time winner on the DP World Tour, a couple wins this season, had seen his golf mortality, but finding his way to the winner's circle 2 times now in 2022. Definitely a story to feel good about. Folks, Patrick Cantlay, another story to feel good about, entered the winner's circle again, PGA Tour, with his buddy Xander Schauffele. More on Patrick's road to success later in this very show.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome back into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. And Damon, you seem to be the only Southern California golfer who didn't get a trophy this weekend.
How about that? Good for Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. You know, both been kind of knocking on the door this season. Cantlay had a couple of losses in playoffs. Schauffele hasn't won since that Olympic gold medal, hadn't won on the PGA Tour since 2019. It's hard to win out there. I think that winning a PGA Tour event is extremely special.
Do you count it as a half win or a win?
It's a win. No official world golf ranking points, but it
perhaps could be confidence. I'm giving it a full win. So does the history books. Are you giving it a full win?
I think I am, because the impact of it is the same as winning, I think, an individual tournament. For a lot of these guys, it's a lot of psychological confidence and a bit of jet fuel that they're going to take forward into the rest of the season. We've seen it happen with other winners here.
Absolutely. Never know what might happen. Speaking of winning, time now for Winning Moments, presented by Win Grips. Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele winning the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. Tournament record 29 under 259, becoming the first team to win the event in wire-to-wire fashion. Cantlay collects his seventh PGA Tour victory. Schauffele picks up number five and first since 2019. And we've talked about it quite a bit. A lot of similarities between these two sons of Southern California. Strokes gained total last year and this year, both very similar. Some runner-ups, actually three between them over the last couple of years, six in total, and maybe a little more winning done by Patrick Cantlay of late. And after a steady climb through the world rankings, Patrick Cantlay has now reached the upper echelon of the game. Four-time winner last season and the reigning PGA Tour Player of the Year. But if you ask him, all that success is just a byproduct of his process, full of methods that have helped him overcome obstacles and heartbreak while finding himself along the way. Ryan Lavner has the story.
It's not always an easy, predestined path to success.
Patrick Cantlay, one of the most amazing performances we've ever seen.
Every experience, especially impactful experiences, shape you daily.
Unflappable attitude and steady demeanor.
There's no give up in this guy. What a meteoric rise. This guy is suddenly a superstar.
Life is not golf, and golf is not life.
With low scores and high praise, golf seemingly came easy to Patrick Cantlay, to the point that it motivated his peers.
Patrick Cantlay and I, when we're playing golf, are almost two different people. You won't be able to know what he's thinking at all. I'm trying to be a little more towards him.
He was dominating as a freshman in college, and then as a sophomore in college, he was beating the Spieths and the Thomases. He was that guy before those guys.
While at UCLA, Cantlay spent a then-record 55 weeks as the top-ranked amateur in the world. He also dazzled at the next level, earning low amateur honors at the 2011 U.S. Open.
Please recognize Patrick Cantlay.
I got to caddy for him at Congressional. I always knew that he was going to be a tour player, and I also knew that he was going to be a great player.
The next week, Cantlay fired a 60 at the Travelers Championship, this time with his best friend Chris Roth on the back.
19-year-olds are supposed to be studying history. They're not supposed to be making it.
It was ridiculous. The way he's going right now, it's pretty special.
You realize how big that grin is on your face?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cantlay turned pro in 2012 to outsized expectations. But before long, his linear path to success was derailed. In 2013, while warming up on the range, he felt a stabbing pain in his back. Later, he was diagnosed with a stress fracture in his L5 vertebrae, the beginning of a maddening and methodical recovery.
I definitely saw a number of people to try and help me, physical therapists and doctors, chiropractors, and I got told that I needed to take a year off after already having been out close to 2 years, and that really floored me.
Already reeling, he soon endured unimaginable trauma. In February 2016, Cantlay was out in Newport Beach with his friend Chris Roth.
New information out of Newport Beach, where police released the name of a man killed in the hit and run. Police say Nancy Flores hit Christopher Roth with her car as he was crossing the street and kept going.
Cantlay rushed to his friend's aid and called 911, but it was too late. Roth was pronounced dead at the hospital. He was just 24 years old.
It affected me demonstrably. You know, at the time, no real, like, bad things that happened in my life. This was the first real monumental sadness I had ever felt.
After he said, "What am I going to do with this?" And I said, "You're not going to do anything with this. It's never going to go away. Those things are permanent. You can't change them."
You know, I was definitely depressed. I felt as though nothing mattered. I realized that that way of thinking was not helpful. I had a whiteboard with 8 things that I had to do every day. They would be very little things, and every day I'd check off on the whiteboard. One of them may have been go to physical therapy. But that process of checking off the items on the list, even though I wasn't doing a lot, I was making steps in the right direction every day, and that really helped me.
We had many a conversation on whether he wanted to keep playing. He had talked with Chris's family about this is what he would want you to do.
Recovering physically and healing emotionally, Cantlay returned to the PGA Tour in early 2017. Needing only 2 starts to secure his card, he closed out his comeback year with his first tour victory.
Once a can't-miss kid, now he's a winner on the PGA Tour.
And there's only 2 things that happen when you go through a rough time. Either it sets you back forever or you persevere and you're better because of it. He's definitely done the second one.
These days, Cantlay is known more for his efficient, unflinching style of play rather than his inspiring backstory. In 2021, he ascended to new heights.
FedEx Cup champion.
What an achievement.
Earning PGA Tour Player of the Year honors and starring in his Ryder Cup debut.
Yes, sir, he figured it out. Look at Cantlay. Now he's getting the crowd riled up.
Is that Patrick Cantlay?
Yeah.
There was no leap. All of the tweaks I made were standard tweaks that I would make in a normal year, nothing crazy different. When you're in the moment and you're down the stretch of winning a golf tournament, nothing else matters. Golf is so great at getting you to focus on the present.
Cantlay the winner.
On the golf course, in life, when you start feeling more comfortable in uncomfortable situations, then you can break out and you can get to that next level. And that's what Patrick has done.
To access that next level, Cantlay will rely on the same values that once appeared on his whiteboard. Process. Purpose. Patience. That's what has guided him through the setbacks and the grief. And now, to the resounding success.
Staying process-oriented helps. There are things that are much more important than golf. Having the right perspective can help you navigate the highs and lows. It's never as easy as it seems sometimes, and it's never as difficult as it can feel. If you are cognizant of that and work hard every day, even on 8 little things on a whiteboard, over time you can achieve really big, great things.
That efficient play, as Ryan Lavner called it, has Patrick Cantlay as the winningest golfer on the PGA Tour since October of 2020. Not John Rahm, not Justin Thomas, not Rory, not Hideki Matsuyama. It is Patrick Cantlay, last year's Player of the Year on the PGA Tour, who I think in some ways, Eamon, continues to go a little bit underappreciated or under the radar. Obviously, his personality is not loud and excessive, and he's not a me type of person. But what do you make of not just his latest win, but kind of where he sits in the game?
I think that piece that Ryan Lavner did gives you a real understanding of not just who Patrick Cantlay is, but why he wins in the manner that he wins, which is entirely unflappable. He had a great line in there. He said, "Golf is not life, and life is not golf." Mm. And there are a lot of people, particularly early-ish in their career, like Patrick Cantlay, who haven't got that kind of perspective. That's perspective that's really hard-earned sometimes, and particularly hard-earned in Patrick Cantlay's case, because as we saw, he was at a point in life where he couldn't play with his injuries, and then was at a point in life where he didn't know if he wanted to play after the death of Chris Roth. So where he's gotten to now is, I think, a testament to fortitude and determination. So the personality may not be the loudest, most boisterous, but the determination can hold its own with anybody out there on tour.
So he'd never had his heart broken the way he did until his friend Chris died a few years ago. We're going to bring in Paige McKenzie once again on this Monday. We've talked about Patrick Cantlay a lot through the years. Paige, what do you make of kind of where he sits in the game right now and kind of the way he goes about his business, much more methodical, not very showy week to week on the PGA Tour?
I think he's very authentic to who he is, and he knows who he is. I think when you go through something, several things, obviously, a personal tragedy as well as personal injury, you learn a lot about yourself, and he's clearly comfortable in his own skin. I think he's vastly underrated. I think if the injury had happened after he had started to make a name for himself on the professional level, then we would have paid a lot more attention to the climb to get to this point in his career. I very vividly remember hearing about him as an amateur. I knew the trajectory that he was on. So I've always kind of paid attention to coming back from that injury. In fact, it was very similar to the same back injury that I went through. So I admire just the will to get through 3 years of taking off from this game and wanting to come back and having the ability to come back at the level that he has. I'm sure that there's a management in whatever he has to do physically to stay and maintain in the best shape that he can. So I think, though, that whole story of him coming back has been very, very underrated from just an inspirational story of somebody overcoming physical injury to get back to the best player in the world, one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, one of the greatest amateur careers. 109 weeks is the number one ranked amateur in the world. He details the heartbreak, losing a friend, also the back injury. I think in some ways his biography, maybe in many ways, will be the key to him having a fantastic career and potentially maybe one day a Hall of Fame career. When you're talking about a player who wants to win major championships and really hasn't been in the maw of a major championship Sunday, I think his backstory would put him in great stead to handle almost anything that is thrown his way.
And if we're talking about a guy who's ranked number 5 in the world and has 7 PGA Tour wins, and we're talking repeatedly about how he's underrated and not fully appreciated, that really ought to scare a lot of the folks who are out there now who are in competition against him every week. Paige, always appreciate your insights. Look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. And now here's
likewise,
a time.
Thanks, guys.
For a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. The reason this matters, everyone who's finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 since 2009 has made it to the Tour Championship. And Patrick Cantlay is in there at number 4, up from 9th place last week.
Everybody's smiling on that picture. And why not, Eamon, huh?
They're all going to collect a nice check at the end of that one. Well, the qualifying process has been a hallmark for the US Open for more than a century. Local qualifying takes place at 109 sites nationwide over the next month, and it gets underway today. Perhaps the winner of the next Open Championship is one of the thousands pulling on their spikes today. We'll talk about it next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Oh, it's that time of year again. The road to Brookline begins today with the start of local qualifying for the 2022 U.S. Open. 4 local qualifiers are expected to be held today. Coral Ridge Country Club in Fort Lauderdale, Marietta Country Club in Kennesaw, Georgia, Fox Den Country Club in Knoxville, Tennessee, and Gold Mountain Golf Club in Bremerton, Washington. 122nd U.S. Open will be held at the Country Club in Boston suburb of Brookline, Mass., June 16th through the 19th. Now, here's it work. 109 sites across the U.S. and Canada, April 25th through May 23rd. 18-hole qualifiers. Final qualifying, 11 sites, May 23rd and June 6th. 36-hole qualifiers, all about the dreams and the stories. And how about this story? Familiar name at one of the local qualifying sites today, Julius Burrows, grandson of the 1963 U.S. Open champ. Julius Burrows teed it up at Coral Springs, Florida today, looking to make it to Brookline. Now, why is this special? Julius shares the same name as the grandfather who defeated Arnold Palmer and Jackie Cupid back in 1963 for a second of 3 major victories. So young Julius trying to go to the place where his grandfather won. This is a special time of year. I get goosebumps just thinking about the storylines. Maybe the part-time player who is an amateur trying to find his way into the national championship. What strikes you about this time of year, the qualifying?
To me, it's a real sign of a very democratic approach to major championship golf. Obviously, the Masters does it its way with the invitational criteria. The U.S. Open, you know, the USGA got mocked in some quarters of social media a couple of years ago for the From Many One marketing campaign. Yep. But that actually is the reality of the U.S. Open. And all you do need is a set of clubs and a dream. I mean, qualifiers do win this championship. You go back to Michael Campbell, Lucas Glover, Jerry Pate, you know, Steve Jones. Those are guys just in the last 40 years who've won this. Julius Boros, whose grandson is in that qualifier today. Julius Boros was a qualifier when he won in 1963. And two qualifiers have actually won from all the way back in local qualifying and then final qualifying. The last one was Orville Moody in 1969. Before that, Ken Venturi, one of the great open stories for so long. Ken Venturi started in local qualifying and made his way there.
Yeah, and he won, of course, the U.S. Open in 1964 at Congressional. I think about these steps that the players have to make. And I remember last year we did something called Golf's Longest Day. And after Andy Pope qualified for the fifth time, he came into our Golf Channel studios. I took a picture with him, and he held up the five. I didn't realize at the time. I thought he was just waving to the camera. He held up the five because it was his fifth time through qualifying into the national championship. Justin Suh, you know, hot shot kid going through qualifying. Cameron Young from New York going through qualifying. Grayson Sig in tears after making it through qualifying. We can talk about the big hitters on the PGA Tour. This is where the dreams happen. They made movies about qualifying. You think of Tin Cup. I mean, I just love how long shot the chances are for someone to go through qualifying. But as you mentioned, it can happen. But to me, it's about the dream. The dream is almost as important to me as whether you make it through qualifying or not.
Yeah, and certainly if you make it through local qualifying into final qualifying, then you're on the same footing as some of the biggest stars in this game. There are two deadlines coming up where if you are in the top 60 in the official World Golf Rankings, on either of those dates, you will be exempt into the open field. The first one's May 23rd. The second one is June 6th. And there are some big names who are not currently in that top 60 in the world rankings. Bubba Watson is not in that field. But Ian Poulter. Ricky Fowler again. He's going to have to start to head for qualifiers somewhere to play his way in from final qualifying. So it's by no means reputation alone. Historic stature doesn't get you into the U.S. Open. You basically earn your spot in the field.
Doesn't it tell you how hard it is also to win? I mean, think about it. You mentioned Lucas Glover. I covered his U.S. Open win for Sports Illustrated back in 2009, finished on a Monday at Bethpage Black. The fact that he went through qualifying and ends up winning the national championship, it tells me that, A, it's hard to get into the national championship and qualify, but, B, there's just talent from all over the country, whether you're a former PGA Tour winner or someone who has never done it before at the highest level but may find his way to the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, you could be struggling all year long, but if you get hot for 36 holes on a wet Monday in Columbus, Ohio, suddenly you can find yourself teeing it up next to the greatest players in the world.
Yeah, one of the great stories we love covering at Golf Channel, the race to the U.S. Open. Can't wait to see who qualifies. Speaking of the USGA, there was a fantastic event over the weekend. U.S. Women's four ball. Yes, the amateur four ball. Puerto Rico was the site. Grand Reserve Golf Club. You had Sarah Im on the par four first. I mean, we're seeing so much talent in the amateur ranks.
And that put her one up early. Here's Ianna Hun on the par 4 third hole, her second shot.
Yeah, it can get very windy in Puerto Rico. Fantastic shot. Conceded birdie. Now on to the fifth hole. This is Bailey Shoemaker.
From 20 feet, sinks it, and the lead is only one up.
Yeah, Wynn and Im having to hustle. Ninth hole. This is Theanna Wynn, par 4 ninth. Little body English. Sinks it to go three up through nine. She thought about the fist bump. They did the hand slap instead. Now this is Caitlin Schroeder on the par 3 11th from long distance.
Birdie putt.
Yeah, absolutely. Schroeder and Shoemaker already in with par. So this is Wynn on the par 4 14th. That was the early walk for the wrong reasons.
Slide by, leads cut to one up. Here's Sarah Im on the par 5 15th, her third.
Yeah. Want to take advantage of the par fives. That's exactly what would happen. Sticks it close, would go on and make the birdie putt, go two up through 15. Now Shoemaker on the par three, 16th, her tee shot, trying to control it with that wind. I think she does a pretty nice job here.
Yep, almost a one.
Oh!
Birdie conceded.
So they would tie 17, and now Im on the par five, 18th. Leaves it short.
But it's still good enough to win.
A one-up win for Wynn. And Im hugs all around. Big
time. Smiles as you see the final bracket. Win and M able to get it done. It's very, very close. They get it done. One up. Let's find out how they did.
We've been doing this since 2019, since we were freshmen and middle schoolers. Yeah. And we've been friends before that for a very long time. We played a lot of golf together, and we built a lot of trust within each other. Like, when someone's, you know, not in play, the other one will definitely got it, the other one's back. And that was something that was really important for this entire tournament.
I think another thing is consistency. Like, we were pretty consistent, I would say, yeah, every round, like 3-4 under, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
But I definitely think consistency and luck, honestly, a little bit.
Luck is is always going to be a factor, yeah, in golf.
In match play, especially in a team tournament, like four ball, like,
that's something that you really need to, yeah, take into account.
There's skill too, don't worry. But, yeah. Would you say this is one of the biggest tournaments you've both won?
Oh my God. Gosh, absolutely. It's USGA is the biggest amateur, like,
tour.
Like, these are one of the biggest tournaments for amateurs out there, and honestly, winning a USGA title, it still has not kicked in. It's so surreal.
Deanna and Sarah with all the feels, lots of reasons to giggle and smile. You get that gold medal, custody of the trophy for a year, 10-year exemption from qualifying the U.S. Women's Amateur four ball exemption for each player to the 2022 U.S. Women's Amateur, exemptions into the 2022 U.S. Girls Junior, the Mid-Amateur, the Senior Women's Amateur, if age eligible. Congrats to Thiana Nguyen and Sarah M as well. And also on Sunday, Scotland's Grace Crawford won the RNA Girls Under 16 Amateur Championship at Enville. The 15-year-old making her final appearance in the girls' U16 Amateur overcame a difficult start on the final day to roll home a 25-foot putt at the par 5 18th and win the 54-hole stroke play championship by four. Top four players of this event all gained an exemption into the RNA Girls Amateur Championship at Carnoustie in August. And we're just a couple months away from the 2022 Curtis Cup. This year, the competition will be played at historic Marion Golf Club outside Philadelphia. Now, earlier this month, the USGA announced the eight women who will represent Team USA, which includes Stanford's Rachel Heck and Rose Zhang. And today, the RNA announced the eight women who represent Team Great Britain and Ireland. They include Hannah Darling, who made her debut last year. She also won the RNA Girls Amateur Championship in 2021. Joining Hannah will be Louise Duncan, who finished in a tie for 10th at the AIG Women's Open last year. And Annabelle Fuller will be making her third Curtis Cup appearance this year.
Coming up, Greg Norman says he wants to play in the 150th Open at St. Andrews in July. We'll tell you why there's a better chance of old Tom Morris teeing it up for old time's sake when we come back.
Club Corp Classic has a celebrity division, which means Tony Romo often in the mix. Par 3, 17 for birdie aiming.
He makes it, gets him to 105 points.
Yes, the modified Stableford format. So now 18, this is a par putt for the win.
Nice. Doesn't quite close it. Finishes Tone at 106.
Okay, that means the door is open for tennis star of yesteryear, Marty Fish, who's been an absolute terror on the celebrity set. He makes that birdie putt to force a playoff. And look at that smile. He's like, yeah, Tony, I got you in my sights. So Romo hits it in the water. This is Marty's third.
This is a nice way to put an exclamation point on the tournament.
Really is. And Jack Nicklaus said that Marty Fish has the best celebrity golf swing that he's ever seen. Like, it's really one of the best amateur swings he's ever seen.
And yet another title for Marty Fish.
Yep. Hats come off, little hug. Former Cowboys quarterback, and Marty Fish wants the best American tennis player. And then you see that tie, but it wasn't a tie, folks. 106, they ended up. But Marty Fish able to get it done, and the World Golf Hall of Fame member, Annika Sorenstam, continuing to play a lot of golf.
You know you've got a good game as a celebrity if Annika Sorenstam with 10 majors is finishing right behind you.
Yes, indeed. Now, so yes, we mentioned this was the celebrity side. How about the professionals? Scotty Parel taps that in. Playoff with Gene Sowers and Stephen Alker. You know, you see old Scotty Parel. He lost in a few playoffs. Kevin Sutherland got him twice in one season. He'd never won on PGA Tour Champions in a playoff, so he got that mini monkey off his back, Eamon.
One of the great stories on this tour over the last couple of years, Scott Parel.
Computer programmer. Went to college at the University of Georgia, but didn't play on the golf team.
And he's about as much of a fixture as you can find on top of leaderboards these days.
Yes, he is. Very nice man. I actually had dinner with Scott Parel and his wife during Masters Week in Augusta, Georgia. Part of a nice group and gathering, and good to see him back in the winner's circle in Irving, Texas, in Las Colinas. You see there, notable Mark Calcavecchia? Yeah. You know what? How about 1,000 starts in PGA Tour sanctioned events? 61-year-old. I mean, I hope he shared that cake. That's a big cake, Eamon.
I think he seems like a generous guy. Calc, a good party guy. You'd want to be at his dinner table.
Absolutely. And just a neat moment for him. 1,000 starts in golf. And now he's excited. I'm going to play in the Open, 150th. You know, my last Open was supposed to be 2 years ago at Royal St. George's. It was canceled because of COVID. Last year, I couldn't play because I had back surgery. So I wrote a long letter in April when I knew I wouldn't be able to play and asked the Open committee to consider letting me play at St. Andrews, making my last Open. They got right back to me. How about that? And said, let me bring it up to the championship committee. And not even a few weeks later, got an email back. Decision by the 25 committee members was unanimous. Yes, we'd love to have Calc play your last Open at St. Andrews. We love to take care of our past champions.
Speaking of past champions, Greg Norman continues to make headlines. The Australian told News Corp that he set his sights on a return to competition later this summer at the Open Championship. Norman hasn't played a PGA Tour event since 2012, and at 67 years old, he's 7 years past the exemption limit for former champions. Here's his quote. I still think I can get in. It's the 150th. I'm a past Open champion. I love St. Andrews. If there's a moment in time that I would consider coming back and teeing off one last time, maybe this is it. I'm filling out my entry form now. I think I'm going. I think I can get in. Well, someone who doesn't think that, the RNA. Their response is, the entry terms and conditions for the Open stipulate that a champion must be age 60 or under, or have won the championship in the previous 10 years to be exempt from qualifying. That remains the case for the 150th Open, and we have no plans for any additional exemptions. Damon, that doesn't sound like a response that would generate much optimism for the Shark.
I mean, what does it tell you about where he sits right now in the game of golf at large for someone who was number one for 331 weeks, who was a two-time Open champ, 1986, 1993, Turnberry and St. George's, someone who has his logo all over the world, who wants to get in, and the RNA says yes to Mark Calcavecchia, and as he noted pretty quickly, a few weeks later, discussion, and that Greg Norman, who is launching this rival golf league, cannot get in. I'm surprised. I guess it tells me that there's no one at this point, maybe even Greg Norman, who is breaking this fall.
I'm not actually that surprised at all. There are mitigating circumstances with the Calcavecchia when he had an injury last year, a surgery on his back that prevented him from going to play in the Open Championship. That's not the case with Greg Norman. Greg could have played on his 60th year. His last year of exemption was a St. Andrews year in 2015. And I went back and looked, and Greg gave two reasons why he wasn't playing that Open. He said, I don't practice and I don't want to take a spot in the field from someone who might be the next Tiger Woods or next Tom Watson. Well, none of that has actually changed at this point. Greg's 13 years removed from having played an Open Championship, a decade removed from playing any tournament that's serious at all. So there's really no reason why Greg would have any case to make for himself to be at the Open, except there are three possible reasons in my mind. One is pure petulance. I think he's upset at how much he's been stiff-armed around the world of golf these days. I think there's Greg's unquenchable thirst for publicity. I mean, a man who's got a life-size bust of himself in his garden says and does things like that. And I also suspect that he's trying to create this image that he is somehow being excluded from major championship or somehow being singled out by governing bodies. Because if his rival league ever does get into the courts in some kind of antitrust case, he will want to build an argument for collusion, and he would like to be able to present this image that he has been unfairly discriminated against within the game of golf. It's not. The rules are very clear. Greg's just choosing to ignore them.
Is there a road back for him? You know, everybody loves a comeback story. Forgiveness. I mean, this was someone who, for a time, was the best player in the world, and I think an arguably compelling television, good for the game. His stubbornness was part of what made him great. I just wonder if you see any out clause for him, any way back into the good graces of the game.
I'm not sure I do, and I don't think Greg would consider himself as being outside the good graces of the game. I mean, he was fantastic theater in this game for so long, and, you know, he built a tremendous career out there. But Greg was also motivated by a lot of animus, particularly towards Tim Fincham, the former PGA Tour commissioner, who he believes stole his World Tour idea 30 years ago, when, in fact, Fincham actually bailed him out and helped him save face at the time, for anyone who cares to go back and look at the details of that. I don't think Greg is looking to get back into anyone else's good graces.
Well, at this point, no clubs in the hands of the great white shark for the 150th Open.